community radio.
It's about real people.
Not sound bites.
Not more talking heads.
Not on this show.
Interchange is a community access media forum fostering unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Conversations that challenge the ways we perceive the world around us.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Good evening. My name is William Morris, and I'm your host tonight on Interchange. Glad to have you with us, especially during this spring fun drive week. Tonight we have two great guests on who are going to take us on a journey, so to speak, through the 200-year history of Monroe County. I have with me tonight Hillary Detty and Cory Booker, Berger. And I have to say this. I say Cory Booker because I went to school with a kid named Cory Booker, whose uncle is now the mayor of Newark, New Jersey, if you know about Mayor Booker. So anyway,
Cory, okay.
I apologize. And both of them are with the Monroe County History Museum, and it's a great pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
To
be here.
Yes.
We have a lot of ground to cover tonight, and because of the fundraiser, our time is just a little bit short. So I'm just going to launch right on in, okay?
Okay.
I got to know Hillary maybe in the last couple years by going through the Monroe County History Museum with students that I teach. We do tours and we stop into the museum, and I've gotten to know Hillary. And Hillary, of course, has now introduced me to Cory, who's the resident historian. Is that correct?
Yes. Actually, my official job title is Manager of Research and Information.
Okay, and Hillary, your official title is?
The office manager.
Okay, but your job goes way beyond that.
Yeah, I do a lot of different things.
So. Yes, such as?
I do marketing, advertising. I assist our managing director with day-to-day tasks. I do networking, outreach. I'm helping our program manager with our summer camp. It's mostly a lot of connecting with the community.
This is an interview show, but I have to tell you, you need a new title.
It kind of works, though. It covers, you can put a lot of stuff into that general. So
well,
we can.
Well, very good. Give us a little bit of background about the museum.
About the museum?
Tell us a little bit. Before we get ready to launch on this journey through history, tell us a little bit, though, about the museum.
Initially, the building itself, I'm sorry, the grounds, the building is currently located on, they were the first African-American school in Monroe County. It became the Carnegie Library, I believe, in the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the Carnegie Library for some years. And in the late 60s, early 70s, the library outgrew its space, and they moved to the location that they are currently at. When that happened, the building sat empty. They proposed making it a parking lot. I believe a bank actually owned the property near it and wanted to turn it into a parking lot. And Tolley came about from that, which was the old Library Incorporated. They came in and took over the building, and they wanted to preserve it, basically. It sat for a long time and was not used for a number of years, and then in 1980, the Historical Society of Monroe County purchased the building from Tolley for $1.
And that is a beautiful building, isn't
it? It is a beautiful building. And the Historical Society has been active in Monroe County since 1905, so they had the space to put some of their artifacts into, and they just went from there. They added on to the building by adding a third floor for storage and expanding the galleries in 1998. The original building, though, was preserved beautifully. They really did not take out any of the exterior walls more than they had to. I mean, a doorway here and there, and that's it. Up in our galleries now, you can see the original exterior windows that are in a hallway of one of our galleries. They built it right onto the building so that they didn't want to screw up the beautiful building, basically. They wanted it to stay looking the way it did whenever it was purchased.
It's classic.
It's very classic.
You know, it's a classical building on top of its beauty.
Right. And we try really hard when we are getting ready to do some beautiful improvements to the outside of the buildings, and we're trying to do all of it on the new part because we don't want to touch the original building. We just don't want to.
And that building is all made of Indiana limestone, isn't it?
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. And all of the new addition from 1998 is also Indiana limestone.
Excellent. Tell us about some of the galleries that are there. Can you tell us what if somebody walked in, what could they see?
We have five different galleries. We have the Rector Gallery and the Brown Gallery and the Hill Gallery. All three of those are named after individuals that have been involved with the Historical Society, the founding of it, or maintaining it through the years. Those galleries are all rotating galleries. Right now in the Rector Gallery, we have 19th century star quilts. And in the Brown Gallery, we are on April 16th opening a new exhibit. It's in honor of National Record Store Day, and it's local vinyl. It's all records from local artists. We have a lot of
Vinyl was in records,
as in records
music.
Right. So on April 16th, we're actually having an event at the History Center. We are going to have a lot of local artists there playing music on the grounds. There's going to be musical crafts going on for kids. Pizza's going to be served. It's just going to be a day of fun.
Full culture.
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's coming into the Brown Gallery April 16th. In the Hill Gallery right now, we have Monroe County industrial photos. These pictures were taken in Monroe County and the surrounding areas by master students of anthropology in Professor April Sievert's class.
Those are some beautiful black and white pictures.
They are fabulous. And all the students are writing papers on each of these pictures, how they chose that location, the historical value of each location, and what it was for our industry. So they have also offered to donate those papers to our library once they are finished with them.
Excellent.
Which is fabulous.
Going back just a minute, that quilt exhibit mm-hmm. is really stunning.
It is beautiful. And that's from the American Quilters Society Guild.
How old are the quilts in that collection?
It is my understanding those quilts are actually replicas. The ones that are hanging from the ceiling are. Now, we have from our collection quilts that are 100 plus years old that have been preserved. One of them we just recently got in, and it is beautiful to look at. It's on a quilting rack between the two windows in the gallery. Very rich colors, all handmade, just absolute works of art. They are beautiful. And I like quilts, they're nice, but when you see the work put into these, it is amazing.
And when you see the designs in those quilts, it is clear that a lot of work has been done.
Oh, absolutely. And there are so many meanings in those designs. I had no idea. I thought a quilt was put, oh, it looks pretty, and that's it. But there are meanings behind designs. And we have those meanings broken down. People have found it fascinating. We also have a make-your-own-quilt section up there right now, a magnetic wall with magnetic quilt pieces where people can make their own quilts.
So. The other two galleries you have the one with the quilts, the mm-hmm. one with the vinyl, the gallery with the industrial photos, mm-hmm. and what else is there?
We have our main gallery, which is our Cook Gallery. It is named in honor of Gail Cook, who is one of the founders of the History Center itself. And that gallery is a permanent gallery that is a fabulous representation of Monroe County on the whole. The Sewards are in there, who are one of the original settlers in Monroe County. They did iron work.
Made the fish on top of the courthouse.
Yes, mm-hmm. Made the fish. And fence, beautiful. Fence is actually a lot of our historic cemeteries in Monroe County that we are involved in taking care of as well through our cemetery committee were created by Austin Seward. And they're beautiful pieces of work.
And those are still there.
They are still there. We are actually doing a workshop at one in October to repair one that desperately needs some help. So we are still taking care of them, and they're still there. It's amazing.
And those fences and the fish on top of the courthouse, these are 200 years old.
Yes. Yes. So it's amazing that they've held up this long. We also have a cabin from the 1800s that is from Greene County, but the family line is still going. Most of them are in Kentucky now, and they actually recently came up to visit and did see the cabin that they had not, some of them had never seen it. So it's amazing that it's there. Their family lived in it. We have the story of the cabin. We have a 1800s schoolroom set up. And kids love going in there and wearing the dunce cap and drawing on the chalkboard and playing teacher. And that is completely interactive for them. We have an entire industry section that looks at Cook, Sargus Tarzian, the Nuri Glass Company.
RCA.
It also, there's a small tribute to the longest working, the housewives. There's, you know, it talks about their trials and tribulations and how difficult it was to wash a piece of clothing in the 1800s. So that's a pretty amazing area. We have an old bird cell buggy up there. We have information on the Monon Trail. We have information on Hoagy Carmichael.
I was just thinking Hoagy Carmichael. That's right.
The great thing about this gallery in particular is we have been working on something called the Build History Fund. And that Build History Fund has gone well. And we are in the process now of having interactive exhibits installed. Basically, the entire Cook Gallery is going to be redesigned. New things will be incorporated into what is there now, and it will be completely interactive and hands-on.
Good. We've got about 1 minute left in this first segment. I'm here with Corey Berger.
Yep.
And Hillary Detty of the Monroe County History Center. And we've used the first segment to just... by way of introduction, tell us where the tell us what's going on in the museum. Tell us some of the things that are on display there. And the museum address is what, Hillary?
It's 202 East 6th Street. We're on the corner of 6th and Washington.
And a phone number?
812-332-2517.
Okay, and when we come back for the second segment, we're going to get up with Corey, and we're going to start to talk about real history. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is Interchange. Be right back.
Thank you, William, for taking down Interchange today and taking us through a tour of Monroe County history. That's a great service to the community, and that's what WFHB is all about. It is Spring Fun Drive, and we need to hear your support for WFHB at 323-1200. We've got all the phone lines open. Poor Maria has nothing to do out there in the front. She also brought us food tonight, so thank you, Maria, for answering phones and bringing us food. And if you contribute to WFHB, we're going to be full of thanks for you as well. You know, WFHB programming like Interchange, where you get outreach and information about the Monroe County History Center, is part of our community radio model. It's so important for us to be able to let groups come through our doors and explain themselves in their own words, on their own terms, without a spin being put on it or without them being redefined into a 7-second soundbite. Interchange is a great example of this. You get detailed, extended conversations with really interesting people that make their home in Bloomington. Bloomington has the world to offer, and at WFHB and on Interchange especially, it's an opportunity where you get to hear those long-form dialogues, where you get in-depth knowledge from some of the experts across different areas. We've had everything on here from religion to slavery recently, and then tonight talking about Monroe County History Center and the services they offer. There's lots of other community groups that WFHB partners with. We have ongoing segments each week. For example, we have the Volunteer Connection, which is done with the City of Bloomington, Bette Savage over there, and that runs on Fridays to let you know about important volunteer opportunities. Because if there's one thing that we understand here at the station is that volunteers equal power. We are a volunteer-powered organization. The people at this station are members of your community. They're your neighbors, and they're people who value the free media, the information, and the wonderful music that comes out of WFHB. We need three callers, hopefully at the $120 pledge level, but whatever you can give. We need three people to support in the next 20 minutes to show their support for Interchange. That number is 323-1200, and you can give online at WFHB.org. Let William know you're glad he takes on all this extra work on Interchange, and that you appreciate the work of all the other hosts as well. Interchange, one of WFHB's longest running public affairs program. That number is 323-1200. Give us a call. We're waiting to hear from you. And William, do you want your show back now?
I am ready.
You want it back?
Well, I'm ready, girl.
I'm going to come back and ask for money in 15 minutes.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
In the meantime, you know what we're going to do, January? We're going to start with Corey Berger here, and we're going to start a journey through the 200-year history of Monroe County.
Yep, let's get
started. And I think WFHB might have been here 200 years ago. I'm not quite sure. Somebody told me that. Corey, one of the things that they have over at the Monroe County History Center is they have a booklet that's called A Brief History of Monroe County. And this thing is rich with content of all kinds of things that have taken place here. The book is by a person at IU named Glenda Murray. And she wrote this very interesting booklet called A Brief History of Monroe County. And the book tells us a lot of interesting facts about Monroe County. One thing that jumped out at me when I was reading this book is the number of economic transitions here from a near total agricultural economy to today's sort of present economic climate. I'm not sure how we would classify it. Can you talk about these a little bit?
Yeah. Really, the transitions in Monroe County's economy have really followed with national transitions from agricultural-based economies to manufacturing economies to now what we're getting into is, I guess, what's termed service and high-end technology economy. Monroe County started out as farming as its main economy, and as it grew, as it got bigger, it moved into limestone extraction, timbering, furniture making, more recently radio, television manufacturing. Cook Pharmaceuticals makes all kinds of healthcare items, and now you're really starting to see more of a service-based economy. But it's really followed along with national trends.
It's interesting. I'm not sure a lot of people know that. I mean, at one time, Bloomington was the largest manufacturer of TVs in the world. Is that right?
Yes, yes. It started out 1949. They began making radios and televisions, and then eventually expanded into, into color televisions. And it was considered the TV manufacturing capital of the world. And it existed up until, I believe, 1998 is when the last television was manufactured there.
It's amazing. Many people, part of the history of Bloomington and Monroe County, of course, is going to include IU. And many people probably don't know that Indiana University's original charter was as a seminary. What were the legislators thinking, and how did IU change from a seminary into really a world-class university?
Oh, yeah. Seminary is a term that was used to designate ideal places for higher education, private higher education.
So the religious connotation that we would use today didn't necessarily apply at
that time. These gentlemen, because it started out as all-male schools, these gentlemen were receiving liberal arts education, classes in English, composition, Greek, Latin, math, very similar to what students had received today.
Interesting.
And it's changed from seminary to Indiana College, and then eventually Indiana University was simply just based on its growth. As it grew bigger, it had to shed the name of Indiana College, and as it grew even bigger, it became Indiana University.
One of the things that I read in the book I thought was very interesting was that at the time of the Civil War, there were only 100 students at Indiana Seminary. So it's somehow in my mind I had this idea that maybe it was a little bit bigger, but 100 students, maybe that was big at that time.
Well, yeah, a lot of the students ended up going home to their home states to fight and partake in the war, and it really put a strain on the resources of the university.
It's interesting in southern Indiana how at the time of the Civil War, many of the people who had come to Indiana, such as Abraham Lincoln's family, they all came from slave-holding states, many of them from Tennessee and from Kentucky and other states. And so when they came here, according to the book, there's a little bit of uncertainty which side people are going to be on.
Yeah, a lot of the students came from Tennessee and Kentucky, these kind of border states, and there was a population of Southern sympathizers known as Butternuts.
And Butternuts.
They did hold rallies at this courthouse. They weren't as significant as in other southern cities of Indiana, but they were there. They had a presence.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Indiana, I guess, supplied several effective regiments of northern troops to the war cause.
Oh yes, if I remember correctly, Indiana regiments, or actually more specifically Monroe County regiments, mm-hmm. were involved in every major battle of the war. So there's a rich history of contributions to the Civil War.
That's quite a history. The you mentioned the courthouse, that they had had some protests and some activities around the courthouse. Where the courthouse is now, has it always been there?
The original courthouse was actually a log courthouse, and it was one block south of its original location.
Probably where WFHB is today. See, that's why.
It would be close to here, yeah.
Yeah.
I told you, WFHB, 200-year history.
For 200 years.
Yeah, and then it was eventually torn down and turned into a brick courthouse in its current location, and there it stayed. It's interesting, at the Lilly Library at IU, they have a document which was a petition from local residents that to the county commissioners stating that they wanted a square of businesses around the courthouse to increase the population and the notoriety of Bloomington.
So when you go down to the courthouse, there's that town square format. And, you know, it's very interesting because it seems like that town square format is very common in, you know, United States sort of designs of towns. But that this one is formed by a special petition.
Yeah. It was common because the courthouse oftentimes served as the center of the town. That's where everything took place. That's where businesses were formed and established, and really the life of a small town was its courthouse.
Do you know if Native American tribes, I think some of the prominent tribes from Indiana, the Miami, the Potawatomi, the Delaware, is there any evidence whether they actually lived in Monroe County or?
No, there's no permanent there's no record of permanent establishments. We do know that they oftentimes had temporary settlements, usually hunting parties, and so very occasionally you will find burn pits or arrowheads. Monroe County was really a fertile ground for hunting.
Do people still find these arrowheads and artifacts?
Yeah, they're still common.
I'd love to find one. I need to go look for one.
My brother and I found them as kids.
Really?
We did.
Yeah.
I heard there's good luck associated with them. I need
supposedly
to go.
There
Where
is.
Did you and your brother find them?
We grew up in Ellettsville, and my brother found one in a cow pasture behind our neighborhood when he was about 8 years old.
And when you picked that thing up out of the ground, did you know it was an arrowhead?
He found it, and he looked at it, and he knew it was something. He was more fascinated with dinosaurs, and I think he was hoping it was a dinosaur, because at that age we didn't understand that there were not dinosaurs here. So he was hoping it was a dinosaur bone and took it home and cleaned it up, and we figured out what it was.
So you guys grew up in Ellettsville.
We lived in Ellettsville for about 10 years, and then we moved to Bloomington.
You know, in this book by Glenda Murray, it's very interesting. She talks about Ellettsville. Ellettsville was once a tributary, I guess, to the Ohio River or to some sort of river. Flatboats left Ellettsville to go to New Orleans.
Yeah. In Charles Blanchard's History of Monroe County, he talks a great deal about pork processing plants that were found. I cannot remember the name of the creek, but it was deep enough that these flatboats were able to float down and eventually connect to the Mississippi, and they would sell the pork in New Orleans, and then they would buy goods and other things and bring them back.
I'm trying to think how the tributaries would work. Of course, you know, if you go west from here, then in Terre Haute, there's the Wabash River. So you just try to sort of – it's hard to imagine nowadays.
It is.
Flatboats leaving Ellettsville to go to New Orleans with some pork.
Only way they're leaving now is if they have tires under them.
Yeah. And no GPS.
Yeah.
Could you talk about, you know, we have the B Trail now, or B Trail?
Mm-hmm.
And the B Trail, of course, I believe is where railroad used to be.
The Monon.
Yeah, the Monon. And what's our mnemonic device for the Monon, remembering the Monon?
Na, 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 Monon.
Okay. All right, very good. And so talk a little bit about when the railroad came through Monroe County and what effect it had on history.
Well, the railroad came in 1853, and it was instrumental in connecting Bloomington to the rest of Indiana. From that point on, you saw a growth of services and industries like the limestone, and you saw a lot of settlements form just because there was more access to Monroe County. So you saw increases in population growth in Bloomington and Ellettsville and Harrodsburg, and then you saw new communities that sprang along the railroad that included Smithville, Clear Creek, and Steinsville.
I think it's hard for us to imagine, maybe we can, just how powerful the impact would be of a railroad coming into the town. It would just connect you. It would connect you to everything.
It was the internet of the 1800s.
The internet of the 1800s. The railroad came through. What railroad and what line was it that came through first?
The Monon.
And the Monon, is that what it's called, or did Monon stand for something? The Middle Ohio, or did it stand?
You
for
know,
anything?
I think the company that owned it was, I want to say New Albany, but I'm not 100% sure. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. One of the things we want to talk about in the next segment a little bit is this thing about, you know, when African Americans came to Monroe County, the Ku Klux Klan, other things that happened during that time, especially as it pertains to maybe African Americans, Native Americans, and these kind of things. Because I guess Bloomington was a sort of a contact zone of, you know, of different people coming together. But we're going to get to that in the next segment. We'll get back with Corey, let him catch his breath, and then get back to some more history and some of the programs that are taking place at the Monroe County History Center.
Absolutely.
This is William Morse. We're on Interchange, and we'll be right back.
Thank you, William. This is January Jones, News Director at WFHB, and hosting you through the news hours tonight. We'd always do news programming from 5 to 7, cover all the issues happening, and it is Spring Fun Drive 2011. So light up those phones at 323-1200. We got all the lines open. We want to see them burning red hot with calls, just like it was a mere hour ago. I know everybody's running around right now. It's a busy time, getting dinner, getting homework done. All those things, but if you're catching us in the radio, please remember to think about us later on and give us a call. We'll be here till 11 taking your pledges, and you can give online at your convenience at wfhb.org. Today's Fun Drive programming is brought to you by handyman Bill Daugherty, owner of Eccentric Enterprises, providing remodeling services and tackling all sorts of odd jobs in Bloomington and surrounding camp communities. You can reach Eccentric Enterprises at 219-4954. That's 812-219-4954. No job too small or too odd. In fact, the odder, the better. And, you know, Bill is a volunteer here at WFHB. He's working right now to produce our calendars. And odder, the better, that kind of fits WFHB. I like to say we have all the freaks and geeks here, a very open community, people encouraged to get their dork on, let's say, and really get into an issue and be an audio dork, you know, be an academic, because everybody can offer that expertise. We have a PhD person in the news department who writes for us. So we've got a little bit of everything, bringing those areas of expertise at your convenience. Interchange is one of the many public affairs shows that we podcast, and we do that so you can have the information when you want it. Also, we get them up on the website. The daily local news goes up around 7 p.m. every night, so if you miss those headlines at 5:30, they're there for you. Just like we would like you to be there for us. This is our Spring Fun Drive. It's very important to meet our goals. We have not had a single caller for Interchange, and I know you people are supportive. I know you're very busy, but if you could just take some time to light up our phone at 323-1200 and let us know about your support. There's lots of levels you can contribute at. Like to highlight one membership level, which we do, is $91.30, and that is a reminder of our prime signal that goes out over six counties, 91.3. So $91.30 is all it takes to drop a little bit of support WFHB's way and help pay for this intensely local and interesting programming. I learned a little bit of history myself about Monroe County and Bloomington City government recently from going to the History Center and researching things with my son. And one of those things was that in the 1800s, the government in Bloomington was dissolved by the citizens over taxes. We had no mayor for 12 years. So I like to think about that, and I like to think about, well, what kind of attitude has that cultivated in Bloomington since? since then. Some people call it the People's Republic of Bloomington because they want to stand up and show that they have views, they have rights, and this is our community to make our decisions. And that's what community radio is all about. This is your radio station. You come in here, create the programming. As staff, my job is just to facilitate what all our volunteers want to do and what issues they highlight as important. So 323-1200, call and give us your support. Say, news programming is important to me. William Morris is a good host. He deserves all the credit. He really hooked it up on his music mix. Let's see if we can get those phones ringing for him. And 323-1200 or online at WFHB. Easy ways to give and support WFHB's Spring Fund Drive. And that's all I got, William.
Okay, January, I'm here. And before we get back to Corey, I just want to toss in a word about the 2011, this spring, the fund drive. And just encourage everybody. When Hillary Duddy from the Monroe County History Museum is here, and of course when she came into the studio and we were getting hooked up for this interview, she told me that she has a WFHB playing for her two-year-old daughter. And I think there's a whole lot of people like that that have introduced music and culture, introduced their children to music and culture through WFHB. So
absolutely. I certainly did. My son has been born and bred with the community radio station, opened his world up to a lot of different music. And you feel safe listening to WFHB because it's commercial free and you know that the content is going to be stuff that's suitable for your kids.
Well, without sounding cliche-ish, it takes a community to raise a child. And community radio is fits that bill. So thanks, January. Thanks, Hillary, for letting me use you as a plug here.
No problem.
But let's get back to history.
Okay.
And I think what we were going to talk about first was the Underground Railroad. The Underground Railroad coming through Monroe County. I mean, I just want to jump out my chair. Tell us about that, Corey.
Okay, well, the Monroe County had played a somewhat significant role in the Underground Railroad. It was one of the key stops. Unfortunately, there's not a whole lot of information out there about it. We do know that there were a number of Presbyterian families who really made it a point to speak out against slavery and opened up their houses to escaping African-American slaves. The area in which the only area that we really know about is over by Covenator Cemetery, catty corner from that. That area is one of the houses that was used in the Underground Railroad. There's also, from what I've heard, one of the stories I've heard is there was a cave somewhere in Monroe County that was usually stocked with food and water, and that was used for the Underground Railroad.
So. We need to find that cave, don't we?
Yes, it would be a great find.
Yeah, so if you see Corey and I snooping around somewhere, we're looking for that cave that's part of the Underground Railroad. That would be fantastic. You know, of course, it would be very difficult to chronicle the history of a secret organization.
Yeah, especially when, you know, people's concern was not writing things down, you know, unless it was related to business. You know, people just really didn't write things down.
Continuing on with some history of African Americans and their emergence in Monroe County, according to the booklet, you know, there was a particular time, it seems like demographically, where the African American community was very close to IU. If like close, like to Indiana Avenue, Kirkwood, Indiana, where those streets are now, and the African American community sort of moved westward a little bit. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, actually, the Showers Brothers furniture factory, when it was located, I believe, on 9th and Grant, was very instrumental in developing the emerging African American community here in Monroe County. They were some of the few employees that hired African Americans to work in their factories. A good portion of those families lived actually currently where the History Center is, in that neighborhood, that area where the Monroe County Public Library is. And then when the Showers Brothers building caught on fire and they moved out to Morton Street.
What year was that?
That was, I don't know, actually. It was the late 1800s.
Okay.
I believe it was, I want to say 1896, but it was late 1800s. When they moved more west, that's, you know, the African-American community followed suit. That's why you find that the Center School, which was the first African-American school, was found in the current location of the History Center. And that's why you see Banneker over on the west side, because they shifted. African-American communities were instrumental in developing the emerging industries. For example, the RCA plant hired a lot of African-Americans. And as such, those African-American communities moved to where the jobs were. Another one was the... there was a meatpacking plant that emerged in the early 1900s, and so there was a large population of African Americans near Arlington on Highway 45. So they've really had an instrumental impact on the industries of Monroe County.
And I think there's actually some photographic exhibits about, not exhibits, but there's photographs about this at in one of the galleries now about African Americans,
yes.
I believe, working at RCA or maybe at showers or
yes. mm-hmm.
some early photographs of
there
that.
There is, and we also on our website you can search all of our photographs.
Wow, really?
And look at them. Yes.
So that's thousands of photographs.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's over 5,500 right now. So you can get on our website and search, and we can print things off for you as well if you find something that you'd like to have.
If there's a photograph that I wanted, I could order it from you.
Yes, yeah? Absolutely.
You know, I would be remiss if we did not talk about limestone. We've talked about 30 minutes of Monroe County history, and we haven't even hit on limestone yet. Let's start there, because some of the information and the facts you have about limestone is remarkable. Indiana limestone.
Yeah, you could have a whole show on Indiana limestone. You know, it was the bread and butter, so to speak, of Monroe County. After the Civil War, the railroads come in. There is a shift nationally away from wood-based buildings into stone. And Monroe County and Indiana just happened to have some of the best...
The mother lode.
Yeah, some of the best limestone. You know, limestone from Monroe County could be found at the Pentagon, the Mellon Institute, the Rockefeller Center, the Empire State Building, the National Cathedral. So it's all over. West Coast, East Coast, it doesn't really matter.
But, you know, you were telling me, I believe, during the break that 65-70% of the Empire State Building is made with Indiana limestone.
Yeah. A majority of it was Indiana limestone from right here in Monroe County. And, you know, the History Center and the library collaborated on a project, the Limestone Project. So they have over 1,600 images of limestone from the limestone industry, and you can find that at www.indianabedrock.org. And it's a great website if you want to learn more, you want to just see pictures of beautiful limestone.
It shows how they carved these amazing things without power drills, and I mean these are all hand carved pieces.
Statues.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. These men doing this.
The ornate work on the Chicago Tribune building. That's all hand carved here in Monroe County.
We have pictures of that.
So they carved it here and then shipped it out.
It. Yep.
Everything was done here and it was shipped in pieces.
When I took students over to the museum to show them all the displays, they have pictures there showing how they lift these large blocks of limestone mm-hmm. out of the earth.
Right.
And of course, the students asked me, how do they cut these squares of limestone? And
Depends on what era you're asking about.
Yeah. Stone cutters, machines that would literally just cut into the stone. Some places used small bits of dynamite to break off large chunks and then break it up further. So there's a variety of ways.
I know this is an ignorant question. What's the state of Indiana limestone today?
It still exists, just on a smaller capacity. There's just not that need for large-scale limestone.
It holds up too well.
Yeah, it really does. So now a lot of the limestone that's used is used for smaller buildings, homes, and businesses and whatnot. especially right here in Monroe County, you can just drive down almost any street and you can see limestone.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Another interesting fact, and we can come back to limestone if something else pops up, because like you said, we could talk a whole show about limestone.
Yeah.
Another interesting fact that is in Glenda Murray's booklet is that once upon a time, Bloomington was considered the middle, quote-unquote, middle of the United States. What is that about?
Yeah,
was
so,
it really?
Yes. So every census, they do a what's called a center of the population. And basically, they look at the entire population. They look at where, if you were going to pinpoint the center of where people lived in the United States, where would the center be? And for the 1910 census, they found that Bloomington, Indiana, was the epicenter of the population center for that census. So you know.
The epicenter of the known universe.
And we have pictures of that event in our genealogy library. It's amazing.
Yeah, it was a big thing for Bloomington, and that's national recognition. So that was a big thing.
Hillary, before we get off the air in a couple minutes, tell us a little bit about some of the programs that might be going on right now. Corey, thank you for that. Fantastic.
You're very welcome.
We have so many fabulous things coming up at the History Center. On April 16th, we have Record Store Day going on. That's the opening of our vinyl, you know, our record display exhibit that will be going on that's looking at local Bloomington vinyl. That day we will have concerts going on, crafts, food.
That's April 16th.
That's April 16th from 1 to 8. We have a fabulous summer program that we are doing for the first time called the Junior Historian Program. It's in honor of Gail Cook, and she has given so much to the community. We wanted to give something back to her, so this is to honor her. And it's going to be three different weeks, one in June, one in July, one in August. The first week looks at prehistoric Indiana. The second week is 1700s to mid-1800s, and the last week is mid-1800s to early 1900s.
So this is ideal for kids.
6 to 12. We are offering scholarships. All of the information is on our website, which is www.monroehistory.org.
And the phone number?
812-332-2517. And you want to ask for Amanda Barron.
Very good. Well, look, it's been great to have you guys on today. We're going to have to get you back again, okay? You promise to come
Absolutely.
Back?
Yeah, anytime.
I want to say thanks to our assistant producer, Shane Young, for engineering tonight's program. Interchange is produced by yours truly, William Morse. The executive producer is January Jones. The original theme music is by Jamil Effiam. And please, we're going to do a little bit of chatting to you about fundraising, but at 7 o'clock, we're going to have Stardust with Brother Tillman coming up next right here on your community radio station, WFHB. Good night.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers working in the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
Interchange fosters unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Comments, suggestions, and program ideas may be sent directly to the Interchange staff.
The email address is news@wfhb.org.
That address once again is news@wfhb.org.